Next case is 98-2435, 98-2444, Todd Hildebrand versus Drypers Corporation.
He knows all that stuff. There's some of that stuff. So, maybe not that long. That way you know that.
Counsel, I guess I'm confused on what your argument is. There's a difference in a rule requiring notice before dismissal, and what you seem to be arguing is that the court had a duty to give notice before considering a motion to compel. Aren't you arguing that?
I'm arguing there are two separate components to this argument. With respect to the motion to compel, under Rule 6D, it would be the appellant's position that 6D of the Rules of Civil Procedure, it would be the appellant's position that a motion to compel is not an ex parte motion, and therefore a hearing must be set, and the party against whom the motion is brought must be given at least 7 days' notice of hearing before that.
Be under 6D, not under.
Under Rule 6D, that's correct.
Okay.
They kind of dovetail with respect to this particular argument. But under 41B1, this court has, in several cases, repeatedly addressed the issue of notice, the notice requirement of Rule 41B1. And this court has held in Quonset versus Ford Motor Company, in Ohio Furniture, and again in the Lockton versus Nichols case. This court has put the purpose behind Rule 41B1 notice. And this court, in putting the purpose behind that, this court has held that the purpose of the notice under Rule 41B1 is to give the party in default, the party who has failed to comply with the court order, the purpose of the notice is to give them an opportunity, a last chance to correct that default.
Counsel, keep struggling with this problem. You have your double-pointed here. doctor's not responding, my doesn't do anything. And then you still go back and the jury says, oh, I should have gotten a hearing, I should have had one last chance to comply. And at what point do you draw the line? I mean, why could you at least respond to the motion from Helen that I can't get the documents yet? Give me another 10 days. Why ignore all that and then deserve that last chance? There's a real balancing act there. At what point is enough enough?
Well, Your Honor, with respect to the motion to compel in this case, that motion to compel was filed on February 17th and was granted on February 18th. There was no opportunity for appellant to respond to the motion to compel. The motion for sanction seeking dismissal was filed on March 10th and it was granted on March 12th. There was no opportunity, there was no notice for the appellant to be able to respond to either the motion to compel or the motion for sanctions.
And there was a request for discovery, was there any motion for protective order?
There was no motion for protective order filed.
There was a pretrial conference.
There was a pretrial, the first pretrial conference took place in February. After that pretrial conference, counsel for appellees and counsel for appellants discussed the outstanding discovery responses. I was.
Does Marion County have local rules?
They do, Your Honor, but none of them address the issue of, to my reading of the rules, if I remember correctly, they did not address the issue of when, how much time was needed, or how much time was allowed for responding to motions.
It says under 3.62, each party opposing the motion shall file a written response within 14 days after receiving that motion.
You're referring to Marion County?
Local rules.
Okay.
Don't they give you 14 days to respond?
I believe they do, Your Honor. And in this particular case, the motion to, we received the motion to compel on the 18th, it was filed on the 17th, we received it the day that it was decided. And we also received the motion for sanction seeking dismissal the day within 15 minutes of receiving a fact in the court that the case had been dismissed.
But wouldn't the local rules give you 14 days to respond to the motion that's been filed?
I believe they would not.
But do you use local rules? I don't understand it. Are the local rules used, or are they dormant, or what? Do people pay any attention to them?
The court did not permit. We didn't even get a chance to use the local rules because we never had a chance to reply.
Well, all I'm asking is, do you feel that the local rules would apply?
I do feel that the local rules would apply. And I also, to address Your Honor's question regarding where did we stop, obviously, I stand here humbly, but I think that we have to look at the, it is a balancing test, and I think we have to look at the facts of particular cases compared to some of the facts of the other cases. The Court of Appeals has gravitated to the holdings process, but in that particular case, the in Quonset, you had a situation where no responses to discovery were ever filed, none. A notice, a motion to compel was filed. 21 days later, that there was no response to the motion to compel, it was granted, giving 14 days to comply. 2 months later, with there having been no compliance, the motion for sanctions was filed. A month later, the trial court, found the plaintiff's counsel in contempt. A month later, the court then dismissed the case.
What's your point? You have, in your case, you have almost all the same steps, maybe some fewer days. But you have the same steps. You have failure to comply, you have a motion to compel, you have no response to that. What's the difference?
The difference is that, first of all, with respect to, we did file responses to discovery. And then in our particular case, a motion to compel was filed. It was granted a day later.
Right.
Not 21 days later.
But I mean, a motion to compel is just an interlocutory order. Nothing flows from that in itself. And that's where I have trouble with your argument. You say a motion to compel should have a hearing. It just says, do it. Now, you could say, you could respond to that by saying you needed more time. There's a myriad of things a lawyer can do. But that order in itself doesn't, there's no sanctions that go with it. It just says, do it. right?
I understand.
And your argument is you need a hearing before a court can say answer.
That is one of our arguments.
What about that one, though? It's just an interlocutory discovery order. It just says answer. Why would you need a hearing before that?
Well, a motion to compel,
I mean, counsel, if that were the case, I mean, we have a lot of non-oral hearings, summary judgment. You know, we don't get hearings on summary judgment. Courts aren't going to have hearings under 6D for motions to compel, but I don't think. You ever seen that?
Well, I've always seen at least 7 or 14 days to respond.
Sure.
To a motion to compel?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
That's the argument.
Well, that is a argument. I think more importantly for this particular case, the motion for sanctions.
Absolutely.
It has been held previously by a court to compile that a motion for sanctions is definitely a motion. It is definitely not an ex parte motion, and therefore under 16, regardless, separate and apart rather from the 41B1 notice requirement, 6D requires that a motion other than one that is ex parte has to be set for hearing and that the opposing party be given 7 days notice before the hearing. And in this particular case, that did not happen.
You distinguish between sanctions and dismissal of sanctions and attorney fees. We did have hearing on attorney fees.
That was, and it was limited to purely to the question of attorney fees.
Your argument should have had a hearing on it, not at all.
Yes, I'm arguing that under Rule 41B1 and the notice requirement and this court's interpretation of what that notice requirement stands for and what the purpose behind that notice requirement is, that you were entitled to an opportunity to hear or to explain the default. Because otherwise, if you have a situation where you have an order with notice, and then a failure to comply, and then no notice over here in dismissal, what this court has repeatedly said is the purpose behind notice would be completely frustrated.
You clearly didn't get the notice required by Longston. Did you get the notice that Quonset Hut, which in my judgment at least, changed Longston, did you get that notice that Quonset Hut requires?
I don't believe so. That turns on the interpretation of the notice in Quonset Hut, and I don't think the court got to that issue because I think it was a fact-specific case. I don't believe that the parties in Quonset, the appellant in Quonset Hut, was arguing that he did not have an opportunity to cure, given the fact that from the time that a motion to compel was filed, 3 months went by before the case was dismissed, he was arguing technically that he didn't receive notice. And in order to find notice, it was the court found that it was the motion to compel, or it was the motion to dismiss, rather, that gave to the appellant the notice. And in our particular case, the motion to compel gave us no notice because it was granted the same day that we knew it.
What if there's a motion to compel and the court issues an order compelling discovery and says in the order, and if you do not comply, you can be subject to sanctions, including dismissal? Does that satisfy 41?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Why?
Not as this court has defined the purpose behind the notice. It is almost what I would refer to as a two-pronged test. It is the notice, but it is also the opportunity to correct the default or to explain the default. And if you have, you're not defending against anything until there's actually been a default. So that notice requirement sequenced as it is in 41B1 after there's been a default, it's that warning signal. It's that notice that you are in default and you have a last opportunity to cure that default or to explain that default.
Doesn't have anything to do with the case, but I'm just curious. This is a lot of wasted time. It's just easier to comply with court orders, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor.
What happened here?
Your Honor, we did not have the medical records in this particular case, and it was explained to counsel after the pretrial that we did not have the medical records and specific records from the employer. In our interrogatory response, what we did have was a list of all the providers, the date of treatment, the bills for each of the providers. We did indicate who all the witnesses were, their addresses. We did say what symptoms he had, what the injuries were, but we did not have the actual medical records.
So your response was partial for that reason.
And that is correct. And in our response, we said that we would see the supplement, which is exactly the same thing that Kelly did in his response to our initial discovery request, which were also not filed within the 28-day requirements. But turning, if I may, quickly to the issue of attorney fees as a sanction, which is the second appeal. Under 37A4, which is the section of the civil rules that the court looked at in granting the attorney fees, it says right in 37A4 that in deciding whether to sanction and whether to and amount the sanction, that the court must weigh the opposition that was presented to the motion in the first place. Now,
Mr. Poisson, if your red light is
on,
if you want any time for rebuttal, you better sit down now. Thank you. Mr. Badnell.
Facts in this case are dispositive of the issues that the appellant raised. And this case is very fact-driven in the timelines that flow with the discovery dispute. Prior to the motion to compel being filed, there were 5 months had elapsed without any discovery response to any of the providers. The brief outlines the protracted nature of the discovery dispute. I'm indicating to you that the motion to compel was indeed filed, and that motion was granted by the trial court without hearing. The motion to compel outlined the exact procedural history and nature of attempting to secure compliance. The court was fully informed of all of the facts prior to granting the motion to compel.
But the court didn't give the other party a chance to respond.
That is correct, Your Honor.
It's sufficient that the court knows the situation, and doesn't the other side get a chance under the rules to respond before the court puts on an order?
Well, specifically, they're conspicuously absent from the rules that require for a hearing on the issue of whether or not to grant the motion to compel.
No hearing, but time to respond.
Correct, Your Honor.
By a written response, not a hearing, but a written response. Doesn't the rule require that?
I don't believe that our rules require a written response. I have been on the receiving end of such an order myself in the past, and I simply complied with the order and have resolved the matter. In this case, the plaintiff chose to do nothing.
But maybe you can't comply with the order. Maybe you need to have a response saying, you know, the medical expert's on a 3-month sabbatical to China.
Right.
You need to respond to that. And here, you didn't even have that chance.
But he could have done that, the plaintiff could have done that after receiving the order to comply, which provided him with, according to his acknowledgement, he actually received the order to comply on February 20th, 1998. And the compliance date was not set until March 3rd, which would give him 11 days to comply, or if he was unable to obtain the medical records, if they were not available, he certainly could have sent a motion for reconsideration. He could have requested the court.
Probably not that, since the rules don't recognize that, but he could have moved for extension, perhaps.
Or provided some excuse or justification to the court that would justify their extending that time period for compliance. 5 months had already elapsed since the first initial discovery request. I find it incredulous to believe that.
The rule does call for reasonable notice, Rule 37, upon reasonable notice to the other parties. A party may move for an order compelling discovery as follows.
And I believe that I comply with the rule requiring reasonable notice by sending a sure and accurate copy of my motion to compel to be
Mike.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Plaintiff argues that reasonable is set by Rule 6D.
And I don't believe that Rule 6D applies in a specific situation. The rule itself states reasonable notice. Notice was sent to the plaintiff appellant on notice that the motion to compel had been filed. Certainly, the rule doesn't require a hearing or a response to them. It simply states that motion to compel cannot be granted for 10 days or 14 days to get the time to reply, which again brings me back to why I think this is filed with the facts that after the motion to compel was granted and the order to comply was issued, the plaintiff's counsel was on actual notice for at least 10 days, 11 days, 90 counted days, that he needed to provide discovery.
Did counsel comply with any information during that five-month period that you said that he didn't answer?
Yeah.
Well, what might have occurred was 5 months prior to my actual trial.
I think the question is quite simple.
I'm sorry.
The question is, did he comply with any of your requests during those 5 months?
Not the 5 months prior to.
So you received no discovery whatsoever and no answer from him whatsoever?
Immediately prior to filing the motion to compel, some discovery was received. So yes, there was partial compliance on the part of the appellant.
And that was, what, four months and 28 days after you filed your motion?
Approximately 4 months and 28 days after I first requested the information.
Right.
I actually called...
Was there besides the partial discovery, was there any excuse given to you why he hadn't been able to supply the information you requested?
I was told that your excuse was not provided in a more timely fashion when they were trying to get the verification phases signed. The only justification provided to me.
Okay.
Not
I see. But there was some reason why he hadn't answered, but that was all he said.
Getting the verification phases signed, Your
Honor. Okay.
Counsel, this is what's your take or your response? Is it plausible that a public counsel believes he would provide the
which is sent to the Center of Lance and House?
In other words, you did just say
the same result.
Silence and motion for sanctions. That your
motion was mooted by, or did, what, did your motion go through what you received and say, see here, Judge, I've been waiting 5 months and finally I got this paltry insult of clients to discovery?
Two responses to that, Your Honor. First, in the motion to compel, the actual responses that I received were attached to the motion to compel because pursuant to the rule, an evasive or incomplete answer is a failure to answer. And that is why I maintain that appellant could not reasonably or honestly believe that he had complied because basic information that the defendant could find on his own was included in the responses, but nothing substantive to allow.
So your motion actually analyzed the compliance that you got in the mail?
Yes, sir.
To the judge and said, look, I've been waiting 5 months, and today, here's what I got.
Yes, so I attached an exact copy.
And this just doesn't cut it.
Exactly.
And that went to opposing counsel?
Yes,
at the same time.
Yes.
And then it was how long until the judge did something?
I believe the judge granted the motion to compel. The order was issued on February 18th. It would have been sometime around February 13th that the motion to compel was sent to the trial court.
This happened.
The act was approximately 5 days, 4 days of receiving the motion to compel.
Pretty quickly.
And in their order to comply, they included the distinct warnings that it's better to comply with this order will result in sanctions, which may include dismissal of the complaint. And that brings me to the point that the notice requirements that have been discussed and mentioned throughout the case law that controls this very issue provide that the non-moving party must be put on notice of an impending dismissal prior to a dismissal being granted. And the plaintiff appellant has admitted in their own briefs, filed in the lower courts, and we filed in this court too, that they received this actual order to comply 11 days prior to the date specified for compliance. The order is succinct and clear in its tone and its warning that they are facing an impending dismissal if they do not comply.
But in order to comply is not a specific direct notice that we're going to dismiss, is it?
It is not a specific direct notice, you are correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But it does include a succinct warning that may be included if they fail to comply.
The rule says before dismissal you shall have notice.
Yes, Your Honor. To date, the plaintiff appellant has provided no justification for his failure to respond to the order to comply, nor have they provided sufficient justification for their failure to provide discovery in a timely fashion. It is and has been established that the disposition of a case on its merits is the favored way to resolve a matter. But it's also been held by this court that the court will not hesitate to affirm a dismissal for failure to comply with an order of the court, provided there is no abuse of discretion. And abuse of discretion connotates more than an error of law or judgment. It connotates unreasonable, arbitrary, unconscionable attitude by the court. What we have here is a court's order ordering them to comply, succinctly warning them that they face dismissal if they fail to comply, and a plaintiff appellant failed to take any action whatsoever. Never filed a motion, never requested an extension, never filed supplemental answers to the interrogatories. We have a plaintiff appellant here that took no action to preserve his rights, and therefore this appeal must be denied.
Thank you, Mr. Bednar.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Please know you use your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Yes.
said, but I think most instructive on this case is what this court has previously and recently held to be the purpose behind the notice of 41B1, as expressed in Ohio Furniture, Boston, and Quonset Hut. To briefly and quickly get to Justice Piper's question regarding the analysis of the answers to the interrogatories request production documents, I believe that those answers were more than wholly inadequate, and they are attached, and I would encourage you to look at those. They address far more than just mere pittance of a response. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.